I can't sleep. It's 3 a.m. in the morning, and I'm laying in a hospital bed in the ICU, having just undergone my second major neck surgery. As I lay in the bed, cold, exhausted, and tired, with a million tubes sticking out of me, I can't get comfortable enough to fall asleep. To pass the time, I close my eyes, and I visualize my home course, playing each hole in turn, over and over again. Sometimes I visualize birdies, sometimes pars, sometimes bogeys. I'm always with my friends, and as I lay there on that cold night, I imagine what it will be like to grip a club and feel the turf under my feet again. I love this game. This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice. Welcome back to For the Record, the chronicles of Cody, Eric, and John Paul in our quest to become better golfers. Today we've got At the Turn, we've got a birdie bev, and we got to play our first score counting round of the season. But first, JP and Eric, I need to tell you about a mysterious package I received in the mail.
A mysterious package?
Was it ticking?
It was not. It was addressed to those For the Record lads.
Are you kidding me?
Is this a real story?
Inside was a mysterious cylindrical object, and the internet helped me learn that it was to be used in a phonograph, which was an early audio recording device invented by Thomas Edison.
Okay.
Now, I sat and wondered how I was going to get the audio off of this thing, and then I remembered that JP has like a million of these at his school because that's considered the latest and greatest tech in his school district.
Very funny.
But anyway, I got it converted, and I figured that we could listen to this together now.
Okay. All right. Bring it on. Let's hear it.
Halt! You stand before the Green Warden, guardian of these hallowed greens. I have watched over this land for ages, and I will not allow sloppy chips to trespass beyond my watchful gaze. Your touch must be precise. Your loft true. Only those with the sharpest skill shall earn passage. But be warned, many have tried, and their balls now rest in the sand, the rough, and the depths of the water beyond. Show me your finest stroke, or turn back now.
Excellent.
Oh my gosh, I have never been more proud and ashamed to be your friend at the same time.
You know what that means. We have been challenged by the Green Warden. It is our first boss fight.
Bring it on.
I needed to give you a little bit of background on the Green Warden.
Oh my gosh. For the listeners out there who have no idea what's going on, we just got handed essentially Magic the Gathering cards with the stats for the Green Warden. The Green Warden costs 3 forest mana and 3 colorless mana to summon. He is a legendary creature, a guardian. His special abilities are Vigilance. Only flying creatures can damage the Green Warden. At the bottom, the colorful quote says, "Only those with the sharpest chips can pass the Green Warden's watchful eye," and he is 10 over 10.
So the Green Warden has challenged us to take on his green, and I figured that it would be a great chance for us to do that. What better way than with Up and Down? John Paul, explain the rules of Up and Down. It's a great practice technique to get your short game kind of wrangled in.
Absolutely. I'm really passionate about this game. I think it's one of the best games that you can play on the green. One of the things that drives me crazy is going out to a putting green and seeing a guy drop 10 golf balls and hit it from the same spot towards the same cup. There is no real life golf situation in which you get 10 shots at the same cup. It doesn't happen. So I don't want to throw too much shade at them, but we found a game.
Except for you just did.
I just did.
Just threw all the shade at them.
I'd do it again. All you people putting 10 balls, play this instead. The game of up and down is you take turns picking a spot off of the green and then choosing a flag on the putting green. And hopefully you're doing this at a course that allows you to chip onto their putting green. And you take turns choosing a spot, kind of like horse or pig or a game like that in basketball. And then in the idea between up and down is to try and chip it and one putt. So every hole is essentially a par two, and you're trying to play for two shots. So if you chip it in, you can get a birdie. But if you chip on and then two putt, you're bogeying. And then you just kind of go around taking turns. In our case, there's three of us, so we each pick a hole. If we play three rounds, that's going to be nine holes.
And we did this at a course this week. John Paul is really good at short game. He chips very well, and if his putter's hot, then there's usually no stopping it. But I am proud to say that I emerged triumphant that day when we played up and down.
You did.
I did.
Much to my eternal shame.
I think it was two strokes. I think I got
two
you
strokes.
By two.
Yep.
Eric, what do you think? I know the short game is one of the things you really wanted to improve on. What did you think of the game?
I don't know. I have mixed feelings, to be perfectly honest. I feel like playing with you guys is helpful, but I feel like if I just did it by myself, I just need a lot more repetition of it, and so I might just take some time and do it by myself, because I feel like that's going to be beneficial to me.
That's a fair assessment.
I think, Eric, I hear where you're resonating from, because we did kind of do it in the spirit of competition, and we were trying to do it, and Cody and I are much more competitive people naturally, I think, than you are.
And well, it's less that, it's more that I need 1,000 more reps, because you guys have 1,000 on me.
Oh, there's so, no way Eric is not competitive. You play him in a game of Dominion, and he won't even tell you the rules because he wants to beat you so bad.
Splendor is where it's at.
But what I was wondering, what I was trying to articulate is, I wonder if the fact that we were in a competition actually hindered your performance because you were nervous about hitting bad shots.
No, I wasn't thinking about it as a competition at all. I was strictly trying to figure out how to play a ball in general. And my biggest issue is, we've talked about in the past that you visualize a shot. I can visualize a putt. I can visualize a drive. I can even visualize hitting an iron. But when it's chipping, in the sim, we do it a lot, and I've gotten pretty good at it on the sim, but it's just hitting into a screen, and it says it's 25 yards. So I have been really good at being able to know, like, I just need to pull my club back this far and then this much strength in the sim. But on the course, I don't know how that translates with grass, the interaction, and I don't know what distance I need to get it to stop on the green, because sometimes they roll, sometimes they stop, and that's only going to come with lots of repetition.
We should grab a shag bag and go to the chipping green.
What is a shag bag?
It's just like a bag with a whole bunch of golf balls that makes it easy to carry around.
That's totally a name that all of us would just know off the top of our head.
It's a very common golfer's name for...
Shag bag?
Yeah.
Like the fourth that gets paired with you. This is Mr. Shagbag. He'll be joining you today. It's a common golfing name.
He's the guy that picks up all your balls, I guess. But yeah, we should totally do that. Throw a bunch down and just chip after chip after chip to get a feel for it. I have a problem chipping in the sim because I'm a feelsy chipper. Like, yeah, I want to like see where the pin is. I can't measure at like 5 degrees of angle. And then I cannot do that.
See, and I'm the opposite. That is what I'm good at, is knowing how far back, because I can give it the same amount of power and then just know I need to go back 35 degrees.
Oh, I was going to insert really quickly. I think, going off that same line, one of the things that's the hardest to develop when you're trying to learn how to chip and get really good around the greens, and I'm still working on this, as you guys know, in a way, it's courage. So I think it's fitting that we're talking about the green warden as a boss, because the issue is, to hit a really good, particularly a flop shot, you have to have decent club head speed. If you're only 10 feet off the green, hitting it with decent club head speed, if you catch it even the tiniest bit thin, It's gone.
Yeah, that's what I do every time.
It is gone. If you catch it fat, you're going to duff it 3 feet and still not be on the green. And that is a game of millimeters. And my problem has always been that I take a little quick practice swing. I visualize what the shot is. I know where I'm going to put it. And the club gets 3/4 of the way down my swing and I chicken out. And what that causes is a D cell through the ball, but it also causes my wrists to flick. And that's death. It's the worst. And so you guys will hear me do this all the time, and you make fun of me sometimes, but I'll sit over a ball when I'm not feeling it, when I can feel like I'm going to chicken out. I say, commit. And I keep saying it to myself. It's just me yelling at myself, commit.
What about, what is it? I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
That's when he gets in the groove.
When I say I'm feeling it, the chip is always going to go well. If you hear me yelling at myself, commit, it's because I can't commit to the shot, and I almost always flub it.
I think that next time I see you standing over a chip for a really long time, I'm just going to look at you and go, The good news, Eric, is that though the Green Warden might have defeated you and John Paul, and I emerged victorious, I have a feeling he's going to be back later in the season. I felt like I wanted to put in his description, he's immune to the Texas wedge.
Oh, that would have been good.
Like, you can't putt off of the green. He only allows chips onto his green. And by the way, huge shout out to Derek for the voice acting on that.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. Can we get him a sticker?
Maybe. I don't know.
I think we need to get him a sticker. I think he's earned the sticker. He is the voice of the Green Warden.
And I'm hoping we can get him back later in the season.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Hey, can I give you some feedback on the up and down game, though? And it seems terrible that I should have to give feedback to anybody because I was not victorious. But my friend Cody, you only brought the one wedge.
Do you want to know why?
Yeah, I want to know why.
One, I don't like my 60 degree or 56 degree. And two, I don't like it because I'm scared of it.
You got it. Yeah, so you're just going to cower.
Commit!
You're going to cower in fear of that club, or are you going to learn how to use it?
You know what it sounds like? It sounds like you might need to spend some money and get a new club.
Yes, clearly that's the answer.
So my 56, my sand wedge, I use it out of bunkers. Mm-hmm. It's also Kirkland's signature, you know, from the wedge set, and it's decent. But my 52 is a Callaway Jaws, and I just can't not use that club when I need to hit a wedge shot.
It sounds like you need another one.
It's such a good club. And I actually had exactly the same problem because I had the 52 and the Callaway Jaws as well, and I hated my 58, which was a Cobra. And I solved that by buying a 58 degree Callaway Jaws.
Well, he just bought shoes. He did just buy shoes.
Birthday's coming up, maybe?
And they're beautiful, by the way. The shoes are money.
Yeah, that was a good purchase.
All right, we're at the turn. And a question I had that I was thinking about the other day, John Paul, if you were my caddy, because you give me, you hold back when you have suggestions for me. I know you do. I see it in your eyes because you're like, I don't want to infringe on what I know he's trying to do, but I have thoughts.
That is one of the 10 commandments of playing golf is that you never give a guy advice unless he asks for it.
Absolutely. But I'm curious, if you were mine and Eric's caddy for a day on our home course, because you know that course well, do you think you could shave any strokes off our game?
I like that question.
Okay, I'm going to flip that a little bit further, because if I'm going to caddy for, and I think we should try this, I really think it would be fun. If I'm going to caddy for you, I'm all in. I'm going to caddy for you hardcore. That means I am carrying your bag. I am going to hand you the appropriate club. I'm going to wipe down your club when you hand it back to me. I'm going to have a golf towel slung over my shoulder. I'm taking care of your snacks. I'm taking care of your hydration. I am talking through every shot with you. I'm going to pretend to know how to read greens, and I'm going to give you a read. I'm going to take the flag out on every hole. And for those of We're those guys who never take the flag out. Like, unless
I like to take the flag out.
Eric likes to take it out. I'm pretty lazy.
I don't care. I can't be bothered.
I think it makes a big difference, so I take it out when I can.
Yeah, so I would go the extra mile, and I think if I caddied for you like that, it could have a positive effect if you were in the right frame of mind.
I think it would, thinking back now, I think it would help me a lot because he would help align me better.
Align, yep. I think mechanically, your golf swing, you know, could give oh, hey, you're aimed a little left or a little right. Let's fix that. When you, it's hard to notice that yourself.
Yeah, I think that'd be big for me.
Mental state, because a caddy is someone that also can like help you reframe, get you out of your own head. I think it would be fun to try. Okay. And I don't know when in the season, but I think it would be great.
Maybe
I have an idea. We switch it out throughout the season. So we play around and whoever wins becomes a caddy.
We try it once each?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe. Oh, how about this? Rather than it being that, what if we each had like a token and you could spend it at any time to look at one of the other two and say, you on the bag today?
That would mean they wouldn't get to golf that day. I think it's got to be planned.
As long as we have a set number of tokens, I don't really care when that gets thrown at me.
Okay, how about this?
It doesn't bother me. As long as each one of you only has one John Paul token, that means I'm only going to caddy twice this year, once for each of you, and you can spend it whenever you want, because I think caddying would be fun. I'm not losing out that week. I'm still going to have a good time being on the course with my buddies. It doesn't bug me.
I like the idea. I think we throw it at the end of the round for the next round, so that you know going in, I'm not going to bother packing my clubs next time.
Oh, yeah. So we have a week's notice.
Yeah, and I don't know how helpful I would be as a caddy other than...
I think you'd be surprised. I think you're selling yourself short.
And I think it would be great, too, especially if you went all in and you had the towel slung around your shoulder, you prepare the snacks, like you know in advance.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, okay.
You are pretending that that guy is a tour player and you're going to do everything in advance to try and make sure.
Your paycheck depends on how well they play.
If nothing else, it will give one excuse per year for Cody's clubs to actually get the grooves cleaned.
Whoa!
Oh my gosh. There was more grass on your clubs than there was clubs by the end of the season last year.
You know why? And I feel a bit slightly embarrassed to say this. It's not that I don't clean my clubs throughout the regular golf season. I do. I never clean them in the off season, even when we're in the sim.
How's this? I have a large house full of many weird objects. I will obtain a talisman this week and will bestow the talisman on the winner of something, or on Saturday we'll bestow the talisman, and that will be the talisman that we pass. But you get to use it once in the season, but if you're the caddy, you get the talisman, and then you get to pick your caddy next.
Fair.
So that way it just passes around us, and so there's some incentive to make sure that we all have a chance to do each role, but with the understanding that you get to use that bugger one time, so use it well.
And I've been thinking about this, because it's no secret that, you know, that John Paul, you'd have an advantage being a better golfer than Eric and I.
You're so kind.
But at the same time, having Eric on my side to like beef me up and talk me through it with the notion of beating you is enticing.
I hadn't even thought of that.
That's fair.
So I'm sitting here carrying my own clubs and you got Eric behind you. Like, oh no, I don't like that.
I think that's a distinctive advantage. I'm fine with the push cart. You know, it doesn't have to be like an actual carry.
I agree. But especially when it gets hot here.
Yeah. But that's the notion of the picture going through my head, because sure, you could caddy for me and I could do a better round and you'll maybe try for a personal best. But just Eric and I together just kind of like looking and be like, how can we do this to take John Paul down? And I just like get fired up and like, oh.
I just learned something about Cody's motivation in this whole quest to improve himself at golf. It has nothing to do with personal improvement or improving the game. It's all about beating me, really, what it boils down to.
It's true. Yeah.
I mean, was this
a surprise?
It's time for Talk Nerdy to Me. All right, so for today's Talk Nerdy to Me, we are going to go over our post from Instagram and see what you guys' thoughts are. I used some GPTs and generated some images. The question that I posted was, which bending form do you think would lower your handicap the most?
I think you need a little bit more background, though. We're talking about bending as in Avatar, The Last Airbender, not the Element crazy bending. Blue People movie by and James we're talking, Cameron, but the...
And we're talking four, base forms.
Four elements of earth bending.
Earth, fire, water, and air. As for the rules, no making the cup bigger or smaller or reshaping the green, and you have to leave the course in the same shape or better than it was when you arrived.
The boulder doesn't like all of these rules. I think about this way more than I should. And you guys know that outside of the realm of golf, earth bending is by far my preference. Like, if I could choose a form of bending to have, I would earth bend. I hate landscaping. I don't like to, I would just the image of stomping my foot and having the ground do what I want is so appealing to me.
Agreed.
But would it help me on the course? I'm gonna say fire's useless. And we're in Utah, so water is not as helpful. In my mind, it's a toss-up between air and earth. But I'm still going earth.
You could use it to drive really well. Just boom, pop it up, pop it back down. No one would know. You could hit bomber drives with it.
Do you know what else you could do? Is if you were really good at water bending, you could just make the ball move on the grass. Because you're just bending the water in the grass.
If you're the first tee up, you have to do on the grass.
Yeah.
To
help. Yeah. Just move the ball. Like, nobody's going to know.
Or just bend it right out of the grass. Kill the grass.
I thought through each of the element styles and trying to figure out which one would be the pros and cons. You said that fire was useless.
Yeah, talk me into
so
fire.
So I actually think there's a use case. I think fire...
Sell me on this, because I can't imagine how you use fire on a golf course in any way that's beneficial.
Oh, because fire bending would be a great way to keep your playing partners honest.
Oh, so it's just like a flex?
Pretty much. But in all honesty, I would probably lean towards airbending, a little hint of a gust of wind coming at the right time for me, or that wind that pushes the ball up when it's on the green. I would love to have that like in a really subtle way instead of just trying to make it blatantly obvious that like, yep, I can do whatever I want.
For waterbending, you could freeze the lakes so that your ball bounces off, or you could waterbend. You know, maybe Moses was just a waterbender looking for his ball.
Never lose a golf ball again. You're
like, oh, I'm just going to hit it out of there. That's fine. Hazard what?
Yeah. Golfer for Deer said, I think any answer is acceptable except fire. And I tend to agree, because if you are bending fire at a golf ball, how flammable is a golf? Like, can it take fire? When we had that fire pit in my garage, anytime the golf ball went near it, we're like, oh, I don't think the chemicals on that are meant to withstand flame.
I think we could find out.
I mean, it'd be a fun experiment.
What could possibly go wrong?
Pilland Grant said, wind could easily make your ball move anywhere you want and not destroy the course either, which I think is absolutely right. You don't want to upset the greenskeeper. C. Frigo said, earth, never get a bad lie again, which you could just reshape the course enough to roll the ball as it's rolling and then move it back. I think that's a good one.
Just instant tee.
Yeah.
So for you listeners that missed that post on our Instagram, shout us out and let us know what you think would be the preferred bending style. We'd love to hear it.
And thanks for those that did interact.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to see a picture of somebody at the tee box blowing a bison whistle just in anticipation of hitting a bended tee shot.
We've got some news from John Paul, and there's no other way to say it but just to break right into it. Go for it, John Paul.
Yeah, so just as a little background for listeners, I talk a little bit about my sore neck on the podcast. Without going into too much detail, I had a bad disc herniation in my neck starting about a year and a half ago. And I dealt with chronic pain in my right hand for 6 months going through PT and cortisone shots and all that jazz. So I had a herniation in C6, C7. They had to go take the disc out. They replaced it with two metal plates. So I'm a bionic guy. And that surgery went well the first time, but then I got a really nasty MRSA infection in the incision, and they had to go in and tear it out and do it again. And
wasn't it because of some of the material that they'd used?
Yeah, I had an allergy to the sutures that they used to close it, and then that allowed infection to come into the wound. And so it was touch and go there for a little while.
He became an ood.
Yeah, it was nasty. And I had a PICC line in my heart for 3 months and had to squish.
Hold on. We have to explain.
Okay, back up to the ood thing.
We're not letting that one fly.
All right.
We're talking about an ood from Doctor Who, right? That they hold their translators in their hand that is actually
it's a glowing
their
white ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did you look like an ood?
Well, I had the PICC line and it came out from kind of my underarm. It was by one of the valves of my heart. Now, the guy who put it in was very clear. He said, it's not in your heart. It's just slightly not in your heart.
It's darn close.
It's darn close. So it came out my arm, and then I had like a permanent like PICC line taped to my arm. And then 3 times a day for 3 months, I had this sphere of antibiotics that I had to plug in and walk around with this dumb bag in my hand. And so I'm at my job.
It wasn't a bag. It was a ball.
It's like a ball, yeah. And it's under pressure, and it slowly squeezes itself into your arm.
It looks just like an ood.
The night that I was talking about in the intro was the lowest night that I had. Like, it was tough. Like, I wasn't sure if I would ever get my right arm back. And the reason why I was feeling mawkish about it is because I was so excited for this golf season because I'm back, right? I could finally swing a club. And then a couple weeks ago, my neck started to hurt again, and I got to visit my surgeon earlier today, and I have probably a herniation now between C7 and T1. And it is highly likely that I will get to do this fun roller coaster again in a few months' time and surgically have to go under the knife to get my neck bionically repaired a second time. Or a third time, I guess it is.
One step at a time, though. You're not there yet.
Yes.
There's some things to do first, but...
Sorry about that.
The good news is that he assured me that I hadn't done anything wrong to damage it, that it was kind of doomed already. And really, the condition of it appears to be so poor that there's not much more damage that I could do to it. So that means until I actually have surgery... I'm free to golf. I'm free to do basically anything that the pain will allow me to do. And you guys know me, the pain will allow me to do quite a bit. I mean, I'm not easily stopped.
Well, it's not going away, so it's like you might as well do what you want.
Yeah. What am I going to do, break my neck? It's already broke. With a broken neck and no feeling in three fingers on my left hand, I'm still going to beat you.
Wow.
It's true, though. Sad, but true.
Don't give him that kind of ammo, Eric.
I mean,
especially when my new driver arrives.
The look in John Paul's eyes, we just kind of like, I'm broken and I'm down and I'm still better than you.
All right. I think that leads us pretty well right into the boys' day.
John Paul's driver fitting. Eric and I have been talking about this for months.
Yep. I was the first one to get a new driver because I didn't have a driver. I was just borrowing one, so I got one. And it was nice. And John Paul's like, ooh, I like that driver. But he was fine with his. And then Cody got a new driver. And as soon as Cody got one, well, Eric's got a new driver. Cody's got a driver. We knew it was in the cards that John Paul was going to get one.
Eric's right. This has been in the works for a long time that we kind of just knew that John Paul would not let him go much longer without getting a new driver. We actually recorded a little bit after the fitting. We're going to play some of that, and then we'll come back and talk about this some more. So we just left the golf store. John Paul got fitted.
We're still in the parking lot.
Yeah, we're still in the parking lot. And I got to say, Eric and I are like 4 for 4.
Shut up.
We said...
No, 3 for 4, because the driver won't be here for a week.
But if you walked
out with a receipt in hand,
if they had it in stock, you would have it in your hand. The only reason is because they don't carry that shaft in stock. Looking at your numbers, I took a picture of your numbers afterwards, and I took a couple of pictures along the way. And we said going into this that John Paul needed a bit more launch, and the fitter said that he wanted a little bit more spin. And that was easily come by switching the shaft.
Well, it is the Ping G440 Max. It is with the Denali Red 50-gram shaft, which is a very stable shaft. It's got no particularly like crazy kick point on it. In regular flex, as outlined. And I have to say, the first swing that I took with it, the moment he had that shaft in it was a magnificent moment. It's special.
It went... So John Paul probably got about 20, 25 yards extra on his compared to his current driver.
According to my old driver, based on the numbers that were there, I gained 20 yards carry over total distance. So I was carrying it 20 yards further than my old driver was rolling out. It was 40 yards of carry difference.
So I will say, 12 degree loft, regular shaft, ping. I think Eric said ping.
Yeah, I said ping, and I also called that they would have to adjust the lie on it, which they did 1 degree.
It's a plus one. Yep. So overall, fantastic fitting. The guy was amazing. He was really nice.
I am torn between the shame of having to admit that you two were right, but I think it's outweighed by the ecstasy of the glorious club that is soon to be coming my way. The guy who fit me is a professional, and when I called to make the appointment, the people over the phone who set the appointment for me were like, oh, we're going to hook you up with this guy. He is our best fitter. I know now why he is their best fitter, and I suspect when he arrives at work each day, they lay palm fronds on the ground in front of him as he walks in the door, because he is not only a very affirming individual and very skilled in the ways of the golf swing and really knowledgeable about all the clubs and the way to maximize your swing potential. He's also the single most aggressive salesperson I've ever seen in my whole life.
I don't know. Aggressive is not the word. Literally, you had no choice.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, his tactic was unbelievable. Like, I hit the last three shots with the driver that he set me up with, and he just said, we're done. And I just followed him because he walked away. And he had walked away to the counter. He had put in the order for the club with my information and set ship. And it was a done deal. Like, I was paying for it. At no time during that process did anybody actually ask me if I wanted to buy that driver. It was assumed that because he had found the correct club, I had to have it.
To be completely fair, would you take your time and money to go and do a fitting without the intention of actually buying what you got fit for? That would be so counterproductive.
Yeah, I don't understand what your thought process was.
I didn't have the intention of buying it because the current generation drivers are really, really expensive, and I was trying to be fiscally responsible. But here's the deal. To give you guys some very boring stats, that driver gains me 40 yards of, not total distance, carry. 40 yards of carry. Somebody puts a driver in your hand that gives you 40 extra yards of carry, you don't say no. And I did ask him, I was like, this is a magnificent club. This is a great shaft. And I know that I ended up buying a Ping. Their heads don't change a ton from iteration to iteration. There's minor tweaks. So I was like, hey, does the 435 have the same shaft? And he's like, nope, shaft's brand new. You need this one. And I was like, okay, so be it.
As I think you had alluded to this on a past episode about a coworker telling you about the root beer store, and we found and made pilgrimage to the root beer store.
Huge shout out to the root beer store. I am going to say that it is a magnificent business and it was a lot of fun walking in. The building hasn't been made up to look old-timey. It is old-timey. That building was built in the 1880s, 1890s, and it shows. Like, I feel like a stiff breeze is going to blow it over. The manager was there. He was a super nice guy. We got some pictures with him. He recommended some root beers to us. It was like visiting Mecca if you're a root beer fan. It was awesome. We also found out that they have a subscription for like a root beer of the month club.
That's the gift that keeps on giving, Clark.
You bet. And so if you are also a fan of root beer and you live very far from us, which is likely, but would like in on the root beer store, you can visit their website and sign up for a monthly root beer delivery.
We each picked up a Birdie Bev when we were there, different root beers to try out, and Eric definitely picked the best one.
I got an all-natural root beer. It's got a picture of a bear on it. I have already opened it, and it smells very caramely. I'm pretty excited. There is a... Wow, it is very caramely. It's better than our other all-natural, but it still has a little bit of that odd flavor to it, but it is much better.
Oh, that's good. That's got notes of ginger in it. It's got that butterscotch. It's not as sweet as it smells. It smells way sweeter than it is.
Yeah. Is that the root bear?
That's the root bear.
Yeah, it's got that good caramely flavor. I ended up with a Three Stooges root beer. Wise Guy root beer has a picture of the Three Stooges in cowboy hats, which is a little silly.
Yeah, not much going on. It's a pretty standard root beer. Not bad, though.
Yeah, I like that. That's nice.
It's like a root beer you would just grab off the shelf.
It's unoffensive.
Yeah, it's unoffensive. It's not special. It's just there.
I've got the Genuine Hank's Gourmet Philadelphia Recipe Diet Root Beer. Being the diabetic guy, I figured I'd go diet since I plan to slam this whole thing. I don't have high hopes for it, but we'll give it a shot. That the flavor of it is mediocre when it hits your tongue, and then it just disappears. It tastes like nothing. It's amazing. Like, its tastelessness is truly remarkable.
Oh, yeah. That's lost a lot of its flavor. There's not much going on there.
That is the weirdest root beer. There's just, like, nothing to it. There's a little hit at the beginning, and then it just fades away to nothing.
Okay, so let's talk about the Hank's. Now you guys have tried the Hank's Diet Gourmet Root Beer. Actually, my power ranking on this has fallen. I'm going to give this a 4. But I think we need a different power ranking scale for diet versus undiet.
That's fair. A regular root beer is always going to be better than a diet in terms of pure taste, yes. I feel.
So I'm
going to
call this on the diet scale a 4.
I have a hard time giving that one a 4 just because it has no flavor. I would give it a 3. It's unoffensive, but it's just meh.
Of the diet sodas we've tried so far, it is the least of us all.
Well, no, but that having been said, the one that we did, the poppy one that we did, or the pop one or whatever that was. Pop. Yeah, see, that was actually physically painful. Like, it was offensive to drink. Yeah. This is at least non-offensive, so that's why the 4... I think I gave the Ollie Pop a 2, so it's a little better than that, but not good.
I'd give the Hank's Diet, honestly, it's probably like a 3 for me.
Yeah.
The Three Stooges, I'd probably give it like a 6. It's not offensive, but it's not special.
I was gonna say a 5, right down the middle.
I'm with Eric. I think a 5, but to be clear, that's a non-diet root beer, so that's a 5 on the non-diet scale.
Yeah. Eric's, I'll give it a 7.5.
I was gonna give it an 8.
Yeah, it's good. I'll give it a 7.
So following our pilgrimage to the root beer store, we had the opportunity to actually go out and get a scoring round of golf. We found basically the only golf course that was open that would allow us to ride carts on it because it's been very wet and cold and snowy here. And it was great. It's a little executive course, which we've played before. At least I've played it, and I know Cody's played it. And Eric has been there before, but they have a par 3 course and an executive.
We played the executive before.
We played the executive. So you've been on that course before as well.
Yeah.
And it's a good course. It's shorter. It's a par 32? Par 32. So it's not terribly long. But any golf course in the storm will do it. And it had been snowing on and off all day, so it's miraculous they let us go out.
I actually thought the course conditions, considering the weather, were pretty decent. The fairways were nice. The greens weren't overly, you know, fast or slow. They were just fine.
I also would like to point out that on the very, very first hole, we had the opportunity for another first tee driver shot, which is always very important in the round. Eric striped one right down the middle. It was absolutely beautiful. He had the furthest drive. I also hit a very nice one, just slightly not quite as far as Eric's. The new driver again should solve that problem. What did you do, Cody?
I topped it again and then hit it over into the trees.
Did you figure out your driver that
yeah.
day?
Oh yeah, I did. After that, first hole, topped it, ended up by a tree, punch out, and then from there, I was okay. My irons were a lot better. My chipping and putting were good. And then since it was an executive, I only had the chance to bring out the driver, I think, 2 other times. And both of those drives were just fine.
What about the one that went in the opposite fairway?
I still played it and made par.
Okay. Yeah, that was still fine. He outscored us on that hole, even from the other fairway, which is sort of embarrassing. I had a really good round as well. And weirdly, I was hitting my driver quite well. And the iron striking was also pretty good. And my putter, Captain Spock, was stone cold. I kept saying in my mind, like, to leave a lag putt 8 feet short is illogical. And yet it kept happening.
I was really hoping you would have been able to get your driver from the store that day, because we all kind of got something new golf related. You ordered your driver but didn't have it. I got new golf shoes, and they helped immensely. But I got to say, the win of the day the 5-wood that Eric picked up.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about the 5-wood, Eric.
I was looking for a 5 or 7-wood. I had a couple of hybrids, a 3 and a 4 hybrid that Cody and John Paul had given me that nobody could hit.
I'm sorry. That's a terrible club.
Yeah, everybody hated them.
I think it's an interesting psychology that exists in golf is that when you've got a buddy who's learning the game, you tend to give them the used clubs that have dropped out of your bag. Consider that for a moment. This club is no longer good enough to be in my bag. Here, buddy, who's just learning how to golf, I can't hit this, but why don't you give it a shot, right?
And I was hoping we'd glance over that because I did Eric dirty.
That 3 hybrid is unhittable. That club is hateful.
Yeah, the 4 was also, I hit that a few times pretty well, but never very far. There was a Styx 3-wood that I was tempted to just pick up because it was only $30 and it was in great condition.
I'm surprised they had it because Styx is a direct-to-consumer golf club company.
Used.
Okay, so someone brought it in.
We ended up finding a Callaway Rogue 5-wood. I gave it some swings and I was hitting it really well. Yeah, the first hole we pulled up, I hit my driver. It was great. The second hole was just a little par 3. And then the third one was another par 3. But it was a long par 3.
It was like 195, which is a decent length for us for a par 3.
195 flag into wind.
Yeah. So I pulled out the new shiny 5-wood and I striped it and it went right on the green and I 2-putted for a par.
You were the only one that made that on the green on that
yeah,
hole.
Yeah, I was the only one that made it on the green.
I pushed it out left and I think John Paul came up short.
Yeah, I did hit it short. The thing that's awesome about that new 5-wood that you've got in your bag is that your swing with it looks so effortless. It's just smooth, effortless. It makes this lovely bing sound, and the ball just goes for days. It's fantastic. And you hit it a fair number of times.
Yeah, we had a par 5 on the next hole, and I hit a drive, and then I hit that, and I actually went just long of the green on that one.
After our round of golf, we were able to go over to John Paul's house and order some pizza and tell us about the creepy old school video game we played that you enjoyed so much, John Paul.
Oh my gosh. So we did play some good retro games, the All-Star Champion blah, blah, blah thing. What's it called again?
It's the NES World Championship.
Cody's only told me that like 12 times. Anyway, that was really fun. And then somebody had suggested that we play through Majora's Mask because I've never played that game. I know, Cody, it's one of your wife's favorites.
It is, and I've never actually played it. I played Ocarina of Time, The Legend of Zelda, growing up, which is one of my favorite Zelda games. Never got into Majora's Mask. And have you played it, Eric?
Majora's Mask?
Yeah.
Just the very beginning, and I've seen friends play.
I've got to tell you, I'm a huge fan of the Zelda franchise. I love all the Zelda games. We could do a power ranking of them, but for the purposes of this discussion, I'm going to say that this game has got to possess the most off-putting NPCs that have ever existed. They are all really creepy, like in everything about them. Even somehow they managed to make the moon, which is a celestial object, seem extremely terrifying. I don't know how they did that, but I don't know. I had a hard time sleeping.
I thought he was the least terrifying character in that game. Tingle or Tingy, whatever his name is.
Yeah, that dude's messed up.
Very. And then the mask salesman, when he finds out that you lost his Majora's Mask, he goes all super dark and ominous on you, and it's scary. We'll have to post some on our socials of some of those faces they do.
The most terrifying people are the people who smile when they're mad at you, and that holds true with that guy.
Birdie Bev. Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
That's right, it's time for another Birdie Bev. What do we got today, Eric?
It looks like we've got ourselves a Root Beer Caldera Soda Works Low Sugar.
Now, I'm looking at this from here. I can see 70 calories for the can. So it's not a zero sugar, but it is significantly less sugar than a normal high fructose corn syrup soda. John Paul, I did a little math just for you.
Oh.
Now, I know you have your love of the Haribo Coke gummies.
Oh, no. You're going to tell me how many carbs they have, aren't you?
Oh. I wasn't going to tell you. So, do you want to know that, or would you like to know the comparison?
Let's have the comparison.
Okay.
Maybe we could convert it to Badgers, and then it won't sound so bad.
One Haribo Coke gummy is equivalent to one shot glass of Caldera.
Oh.
This is one Coke gummy.
Well, that's not bad at all. One Badger worth of sugar.
Yep. The problem is, I know that it's probably the absorption rates of liquid sugar versus food that gets you, right?
It is, but I think I can get away with this. It's just small enough.
It's from Ashland, Oregon.
Ashland, Oregon. Let's give it a
We did not see this in the root beer store. I had to order this online.
Is this like a special one?
Someone on Reddit said, try it. And I said, okay.
Now we make the chink.
I really like it. I don't know if you guys are a Star Anise fan. It has just a little bit of that. I'm a big fan.
I like that.
It's smooth. We've talked about like the chemical flavors that sometimes will hit you. This has none of that. It is good.
That's because it only has pure cane sugar as the sweetener.
It shows. Yep.
That explains its nice caramely start. It does start with a very hard shot of caramel, which is nice. It ends well, too. That's very nice. I like that. Pure cane sugar is the only sweetener here?
Yeah. And it's significantly less than like a normal root beer would have.
Wow, how do they do that? This thing only has 15 grams.
Yeah.
The whole can.
Uh-huh.
I can get away with that.
How much was it?
A six-pack was $12. So about $2 a can.
That's not bad.
I think this is the first one that we've tasted that is a legitimate go-back. Like, I would seek this out. That's good.
I probably am like a 9, maybe even a 9.5. I really like it.
I have to know, with the diabetic in you, how much of this could you actually drink? Could you have this as a special occasion drink?
Oh, at 15 grams, it doesn't even have to be a special occasion drink. I could have a whole can of that and be fine. I couldn't have multiple cans of it. As long as I nursed it and drank it slow, I could drink a whole can of that. On an empty stomach, first thing in the morning, would be a terrible idea. But
2 a.m. when you're feeling parched, you probably couldn't do that.
No. In the midnight hours, you know, carbs don't count. I'm going to give it an 8.5, though, and that's high praise for me. The reason why is because it's not offensive on its finish, but I do have to keep going back to it to keep it pleasant. Does that kind of make sense? And I would imagine that when I get to the bottom of the can, there's just going to be, you know, 10 minutes from there, I'm going to have to eat a snack or a chip or something to clean that out.
I really like it, but there's a couple of root beers that I've had that are really good. I just don't know if it's 9 worthy. I think I'm at an 8.5 as well.
I don't know what to do with this on our rating scale, though, because we have a diet rating scale and a non-diet rating scale. And what do we call this? Because it's not really a diet root beer per se, but it's got a very reasonable number of carbs. And so I don't know which scale to put it on. Thoughts?
As a diet soda, I think it's through the roof. As a regular soda, I'm still a 9. I'm just going to...
Yeah, I'd say my rating was based on a regular soda. I'd give it an 8.5. As a diet, 9. Or a 10. 10, I meant 10.
It is so mean because that is its only sweetener is sugar cane, so I'm having a hard time putting it on the diet scale. I'm going to give it an 8.5 on the non-diet scale, which is very high. If we're putting this on the diet scale, look out. That's a 9.5 on a diet scale. That's excellent.
I don't know if you can do better on a diet scale. I think that is perfection as far as I've found.
I'm leaving that 0.5 because I think that at some point we're going to encounter a unicorn. Cody's come up with this idea of the triforce of taste. And I don't know, this might be a contender for the triforce of taste.
So the triforce of taste is intended to be an award given to the best of the best of the best, sir, with honors. The best root beers we've tried. I think this is a contender.
Yeah, do we award it now or at the end of the season?
I think it's got to be kind of as we go.
I think this is our current winner.
It's the best thing we've tasted so far.
Yeah. So I don't think it's necessarily one root beer that has the award. I think it's got to be just something that we reserve for those special root beers. Even an 8.5, as you guys have rated it, like you said, is pretty high. And as you said, John Paul, you would seek it out. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is probably enough cause to consider giving it that prestige.
I agree. I think it could be good enough. Yeah. And especially considering if we call it a diet soda, if there's a diet soda triforce of taste, it wins that no problem.
Yeah, Caldera, I know you're in Oregon. You need to get this in Utah. It would do well in this,
very
this market.
Well. Yeah.
We will shout you out. Send us free root beer.
Thumbs up from me.
A free can at the very least.
Hashtag buy lots of Caldera so John Paul can get some for free.
Buy the keg.
Oh, if they have kegs.
Oh, man, on the keg?
I don't know if Ashland, Oregon has any golf courses worth visiting, but I'm looking here, the Caldera Brewery and Restaurant.
Oh man.
Where is that?
It's right on the edge of like Northern California, right in Oregon.
I've got it for you.
Oh, right by the Redwoods?
It looks like it.
Oh.
I've got it for you. Your recovery. Post surgery, you need to go on a pilgrimage to Oregon.
I have a bucket list golf course up there. Have you guys heard of that golf course that is in the Redwoods? So it's a 9-hole course. And it is a must play. Like, it is on my bucket list of courses that I have to play because you're literally in a grove of giant redwood trees. If any of our listeners haven't had the chance to see the Redwoods in person, you got to go. You got to go see them. They're unbelievable. It's so amazing. But the idea of golfing amongst them is so exciting to me that I immediately, when I learned there was a golf course there, I added it to my bucket list.
All right, I think that about wraps up our round here on For the Record. Check us out on our website, fortherecord.com. That's F-O-R-E, therecord.com. And on our Instagram, fortherecord_golf.
Listen to us wherever you listen to fine podcasts.
Like, subscribe, find us on our socials.
Make sure to keep an eye out for the next episode of For the Record. The following is a short snippet of our useless yet riveting content. The great Perry Grip is quoted to have said, "Yum yum breakfast burrito. We should call a regular burrito a nighttime breakfast burrito."
A nighttime breakfast burrito.
Oh, I just realized who you're talking about.